From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's being called a toxic soup, a witch's brew, an environmental nightmare. Block after block of New Orleans now sits in a stew of biochemical toxins, dead bodies, and disease. The EPA and the Centers for Disease Control have released their first tests on the floodwaters bacteria count and found it 10 times higher than safe limits.
Well, right now we know for sure that there's sewage in the water and there are a lot of bacteria that can cause the kind of common infections that are associated with diarrhea. Beyond that, the testing is still in progress, so we'll be looking for other infectious agents, we'll be looking for toxins and chemicals, and we'll really be doing everything we can to understand the threat. In the meantime, people have to stay out of the water and, most importantly, don't drink the water.
Local and federal authorities, heeding and maybe using the health warning, are pushing residents hard to evacuate.
Everybody, y'all looking for folks? We ain't going away. We leave. I'll be
You got to get out.
No, we don't have to get out.
Okay. Call us when you want to get out.
So let's go. That's why we want the residents to know.
Come on.
That's why we want the
The long-term impact of New Orleans contamination is still unknown. As Katrina swept in, one EPA official warned the city itself could become the biggest toxic waste dump in America. Now it's taking stock of what it will take to pump out and clean up and what will be left behind. This hour on Point, Toxic New Orleans. You can join the conversation. What are the public health and environmental risks you see brewing in the floodwaters? And will pumps, people, and nature shrug off this toxic inundation? What will survive here and what won't? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We turn first to Mark Schlefstein, environmental reporter for the New Orleans, the Times-Picayune. He joins us from Baton Rouge. Mark, thanks very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you.
We have heard all kinds of characterizations of the waters in the streets of New Orleans. You heard what the EPA had to say there. We've seen even higher estimates of the pollution there. Help us sort of walk through what the issues are that are being faced now with the New Orleans waters. How bad is it? What's in there?
Well, it's pretty significant. It contains just about anything you can possibly think of, with the exception, hopefully, of some sort of nuclear material. But let's just start at the bottom of people's sinks, what's underneath it. All of those chemicals and products that are underneath your sink are now out in that water. You've got all these sunken cars that are in there, and they're all leaking gas and oil and diesel fuel that's beginning to pool at the top of the water. You've got a variety of different tanks that were either underground storage tanks that are leaking gasoline, and heaven knows only what might be some material from dry cleaners. You've got all these other tanks that may have been sitting behind stores or businesses that were on pilings or things like that that are now floated off and have disconnected from wherever they were pumping the stuff, and all that's leaking in there. Basically, nobody really knows everything that's going to be in there until we find out. Now, the results that came out yesterday, that initial test,
yes,
is that there were high levels of lead in the water. Now, how that could be, I'm not quite sure, although New Orleans has always had a problem with lead poisoning from both its lead-based paint on the houses and also from the historic use of leaded gasoline still being in the soils over the years.
Mark, I don't know how recently you've actually been in those streets of New Orleans. I know you're in Baton Rouge as we speak right now. We're reading reports of the live oaks and magnolias going brown, losing their leaves, maybe dying, and bodies floating in the waters being tagged, but left for now because I guess there's not enough manpower to pick them up yet. What is the sort of visceral, physical experience like now, as of today, in the streets of New Orleans?
Well, like you said, I have not been in the city, but I'm rooming with a guy who just got out yesterday, and it's pretty horrendous. He said that not only is the water pitch black from whatever the heck is in it, but he said it's thickening. If you can imagine that, things are just horrendous. I mean, it is. somebody described it to me yesterday as, you couldn't put together a disaster movie set that would look like this for, you know, $1 billion.
The pumping has begun. Yesterday it was just a handful of pumps out of 150 or 200. Today we're reading 10% of New Orleans' pumping capacity is underway. How long might it be until the streets of New Orleans, if not clean, or at least something like dry, or not withstanding water?
Well, you know, the Corps of Engineers has a term for what they're doing right now. It's called unwatering. And I'm not quite sure how they came up with that name.
Okay.
It's probably appropriate. The last estimate that we had, the one that we published this morning, was 80 days.
80 days until what exactly?
Until there's enough water out that they can begin to really seriously look at what's left. It's going to take a long time. And really, they only had three or four pumps on yesterday, not 100. They're hoping to get much more going in the next couple of days, but they have significant problems. Wherever they have a pump, they're going to have a generator. In most cases, they're still trying to restore the power plant that the Sewerage and Water Board uses to run its all of its generators, which is actually, interestingly, a 25-cycle plant as opposed to the 60-cycle that most people use in their homes.
It gives you a sense of how far out of commission things are. Just to confirm, the report yesterday, as you say, was only three out of 148 pumps in the New Orleans pumping station were operating. That means barely limping along here 10 days after the storm hit.
Right. That's exactly true. Now, remember that there are so many pumps there because New Orleans has to pump out so much water when it rains. And so even with just the three pumps, those are huge pumps, and they are beginning to result in a significant reduction of water. But there also has been a reduction because the water is being drained through cuts in the levee system and the breaks that occurred. And as it gets down to that level where, you know, it's no longer above sea level, that's where the pumps are going to be the most important, and that's going to take the longest period of time.
What is your sense of the threat to human health right now? The EPA and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention saying three or maybe five deaths related to infections picked up in that water. We've heard a lot of things thrown around in the last week, dysentery, cholera, typhoid. What's the real public health threat in those waters as of today?
I think the biggest threat is going to be infections that people get from cuts if they happen to go into it. I'm not quite sure that all of this, you know, cholera and typhoid is so problematical. At the moment, as long as people are out, and they seem to be doing a good job of getting all, you know, they're working on the last 10,000 that are in the city. So that will be helpful, but it's that. There also is may very well be a continuing problem with West Nile virus, which already is here in full force, and I think they did report another 20 cases in the New Orleans area from the last 2 weeks, which would include the period after the storm. So that's going to be a problem. Beyond that, it's just, you know, people who are silly enough to get into that water are going to be having problems. I think if they have any open cuts at all, it's going to be real problematical for them.
What about the environmental impact beyond the humans on the streets of New Orleans? This is being pumped into Lake Pontchartrain just over the levee. Presumably, it eventually ends up in the Gulf of Mexico. What's at risk in the broader ecosystem here, Mark?
Well, that is a significant problem. We've got let's begin with the most unique sort of thing that's occurring right now. Before this storm hit, there were reports that we had 20 to 30 manatee that had taken up residence in the lake this summer.
After a long time when that would have been unthinkable.
Right, exactly. The lake had been restored to the point where people could actually swim on the south shore through a variety of different efforts. So you've got those manatee. That's you know, that's obviously the cuddly, although I don't think they're quite cuddly, but that's the cuddly thing that people will connect with. But in addition to that, you've got the things that have been restored because of the restored water quality in the lake over the last 10 years. You have these small rangia clams that have been growing back along the southern shore of Lake Pontchartrain near New Orleans. You've got seagrass beds, you've got crabs, you have shrimp. I think it may actually be too late for the shrimp harvest for this year. But
is all that out the window now, or do we simply not know yet?
No, we really don't know, and that's one of the things that a lot of people will be tracking. From everything I've heard from guys who've been studying the lake for years, both scientists and fishermen, this water as it's released will probably hug the south shore until it makes it down to the two passes that exit into the Mississippi Sound and Lake Bourne, and then eventually into Lake Pontchartrain, the Gulf of Mexico. As that water moves out, it's going to mix, but it's not going to mix that much. Plus, you've got all the water that's coming in, out from the St. Bernard area that is also going to mix with that, which is just as bad. And so all that stuff is going to hug along the eastern side of the Mississippi River Delta.
We've just got half a minute left here, Mark. Let me ask you, are there areas which will not be inhabitable? We're reading that assertion. Is that what you're hearing, or do you expect it to be cleaned up and folks moving back in 80 days plus 80 days plus 80 days, whatever it takes?
Yeah, I think that's a great unanswered question. It will cost a lot of money. There is a large available source of dirt that they can get from the Bonnie Carey spillway just north of the city, and they can use that to fill in areas and cover up a lot of this waste.
But we're talking a major, major project here. Mark Schlefstein with the Times-Picayune of New Orleans in Baton Rouge today. Thank you very much for being with us. We're looking at toxic New Orleans. Join us, 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking this hour about toxic New Orleans, about its new biochemical face, its public health challenge, its environmental challenges, and its cleanup. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Can you imagine dumping every chemical out there into your city streets, plus oil spills, sewage, dead bodies, refinery waste? Would you stay? Would you go back? Have you fled New Orleans? And what did you see? Are you planning to return? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Yesterday, the EPA Administrator Stephen Johnson said that bacteria levels in floodwaters in New Orleans are so high that people should avoid even skin contact.
It's a major health concern. It's 10 times. It's the maximum of the tests that we performed, and that's not good, and that's why you need to avoid contact as much as possible with the water.
How do we deal with a city that has been called a toxic waste dump? 1-800-423-8255. Joining me from Washington is Hugh Kaufman, senior policy analyst at the EPA's Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. He was formerly chief investigator for the EPA's Ombudsman's Office. He's been with the EPA for more than 30 years, done a lot of work with Superfund cleanup sites. Hugh Kaufman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, sir. I just want the public to know, however, that my comments are based on my 35 years' experience in this field and not necessarily the policies of EPA.
Duly noted. This morning you speak from your experience in the field. You have been speaking out quite vocally about what's going on here. You've called what's happened in New Orleans, Hugh Kaufman, the worst case. You said there's not enough money in the gross national product of the United States to dispose of the amount of hazardous material in the area. How would you characterize what's happened in environmental terms here?
Well, this is one of the three worst case scenarios that we in the federal government at the working level, as opposed to the politicians, were concerned about for the last 30 some odd years. The three are a major earthquake in California, a terrorist attack in New York City, and a major hurricane in New Orleans. And this is what the working level troops always were planning for, one of the three things to respond to. Unfortunately, over the last few years, the infrastructure of experienced people that can deal with these issues have been atomized. The country's changed. They don't want government, civilian government, doing these things. And it's been reflected in the fact that the old pros at FEMA, at EPA in the last 4 or 5 years have taken early retirement or gotten out of the government. And so the only entities we have left that are real heroes here that have the infrastructure to help are the United States military and the Coast Guard, and they're doing a fabulous job.
Well, let's turn that experience toward what we see in New Orleans in the last week. As Katrina bore down, even before we saw the full extent of the damage, you warned that New Orleans could be turned in by this storm to the biggest toxic waste dump in America.
Right,
hyperbole,
that was over
or
a week ago.
Has that happened?
It has happened. It was happening. It has happened. Anything that went into the sewers in that region is now in the water, as well as all the stuff that Mark discussed. And the agency finally, a week and a half later, admitted that they're finding high levels of PCBs, lead, E. coli, and other toxins that greatly exceed the agency's recommended levels. The agency only admitted that after ABC News and CNN did their own sampling. Even today, as we speak, the bungling continues. The Center for Disease Control is telling people to boil their water. Well, if you boil water that's contaminated with heavy metals like lead, you're just going to increase the lead levels and increase the risk of long-term health effects to the public.
The Louisiana Secretary of Environmental Quality, Mitch McDaniel, and we'll be hearing from his office later in this hour, but he has said that, I'm quoting him here, he says, the wonderful thing about nature is its resilience. The bacterial contaminants will not last a long time in the lake, that's Pontchartrain. They actually die off pretty fast, he said. The organic material will degrade with natural processes. Metals will probably fall and be captured in the sediments at the bottom of the lake, that is. Nature does a good job, it just takes a while. It sounds like he's saying this is not so bad, folks.
Well, this is what we found. I investigated the 9/11 terrorist attack environmental ramifications after that occurred a few years ago. And the governmental agencies were downplaying the environmental risks. EPA, even right afterwards, the administrator, Christy Todd Whitman, went on national television 3 days later saying that the air is safe to breathe, which is a total lie. And now, I think, almost 4 years later, over 75% of our first responders there are now deathly ill, and they're starting to die off. And that was one of the issues that I was concerned about on this particular case right after it happened, and that's why I spoke to the Washington Post right afterwards on this issue, which is that the water is heavily contaminated and that the people who go in there need protective gear. Because they're the real heroes.
And let's not pretend otherwise, that they can just go in and brave it without impact. Let me ask you about the long-term picture here, Hugh Kaufman. We're talking
very
about
bad.
Well, 140,000 to 160,000 homes submerged. We've all seen the commercial areas and the industrial areas submerged. What do you think it's going to take to clean this up? What's the process by which we begin to address it?
Well, I mean, first of all, you have to try to get the contaminated toxic soup out of there in some sort of controlled release. But there's no free lunch. You're going to lose shellfish. You're going to lose marine life. You're going to risk a wider area of water contamination.
Because, of course, it has to be pumped into Lake Pontchartrain, and that feeds
into the rest of
the ecosystem. Yes.
It'll be initially pump both to Pontchartrain and the Mississippi, mm-hmm. and then flow to the Gulf of Mexico. And that's going to require a lot of activity in sampling not only the water in New Orleans, but where the contaminated water is going, so that we can monitor what's happening and give necessary health advisories down the line and or do some water remediation down the line. So you don't just do limited sampling in the toxic soup. That's New Orleans now, but also where this material is going and continues to go, and be honest with the public. So, for example, people aren't on a beach in the Gulf of Mexico if there's a slug of toxics coming their way.
We're going to hear in just a moment from the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality. But first, I want to turn to Des Moines, Iowa, and our caller, Blair, who's there. Blair, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I lived in New Orleans for 15 years and in various towns and cities around the city.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just what people know is there, it's what people don't know is there.
What do you mean?
I lived in Chalmette near Murphy Oil, and I used to take Almanaster Drive back and forth as a daily commute. And on a daily basis, there was illegal dumping of drums throughout that area. There's a whole community down around the Industrial Canal that makes toxic soup a misnomer. It's far too benign of a word or of a phrase to describe what's down there.
And what about now, Blair? Have you seen it? Have you heard? What do you think about the future, given the toxicity now?
Given the toxicity now, I think your best bet is to plow it under and rebuild under with 15 feet of clean topsoil on top of it. That'll do two things. It'll raise the city up and hopefully bury what's there. Beyond that, I don't see how you can do it other than scraping it down to bedrock, and there's no bedrock down there.
Wow, that's a tall order. Blair, thanks for your voice of experience there. I want to turn to Baton Rouge. We're joined by Karen Gautreaux. She is Deputy Secretary of the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality. Ms. Gautreaux, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.
So we're hearing a range of views on how bad the pollution, the toxic stew, the witch's brew, call it what you will, how bad it is. What's your assessment, big picture?
Well, right now we're looking at the samples that we have been able to acquire, and we have preliminary results that are pretty much in keeping with what we anticipated in a large urban area that is essentially now concentrated stormwater. When you have large events in other areas, typically they recede fairly quickly, and what we have now is a situation in which the floodwaters have to be pumped out. When I speak, I'm going to be referring to the preliminary results that were referenced by EPA yesterday, and what we're seeing is what we expected in terms of very high levels of E. coli bacteria. Mm-hmm. Your callers mentioned that this water is a threat, and EPA and our Department of Health and Hospitals yesterday, or the day before yesterday, issued an advisory, please do not go in the water. We know it's contaminated with things that are a threat to public health, and if, you know, avoid the water if you have to go in, clean off immediately. The good news, if there is some, and these are samples that were primarily taken from residential neighborhoods,
yes,
is that we are not seeing levels of contaminants that pose a human health risk. They did find levels of lead that are considered their drinking water action levels for children. Children should not ingest large amounts of this floodwater, and frankly, we hope that children are out of this floodwater and certainly not ingesting it. But those are the preliminary results that we have from our sampling. Now, what we've had to do is limit our sampling to where we've had access. We are setting up short and long-term sampling programs.
Mm-hmm.
The good news about Lake Pontchartrain and the waters in that area is we have been working for quite a while with governmental officials, citizens, and others in the Lake Pontchartrain vicinity to improve the water quality of Lake Pontchartrain. So we have very good baseline information about the waters in the lake and around New Orleans.
But now you're pumping some pretty bad stuff in there. Let me ask you a couple of specific questions.
Okay.
First, on sewage treatment, we understand that's all knocked out essentially in New Orleans. How long until that might come back on stream?
Well, there are about 25 facilities in the storm impact area, wastewater treatment. So far, 14 of them are up. Two large ones are slated to get back online in the New Orleans area today. If it goes well, we're actually having to airlift helicopters and fuel for generators to get those facilities up and running. So it certainly is a challenge, but facilities are coming back online. And the challenge here is you may have something that's just been knocked out by an electrical outage, or you may have something that's totally submerged and is going to have to be completely rebuilt. So we're seeing the range of minor repairs to total replacement.
What about drinking water? The Washington Post reporting yesterday that drinking water may not be available for the entire population of New Orleans for years to come.
Well, drinking water is out of our agency, actually. Health and Hospitals handles it. But I will say that some drinking water systems are going to be similar to the wastewater, easier to replace than others. We are getting some back online. But it may be, depending on the problem with the facility, a while before they're all back to operating order. And we also have the issue of infrastructure, pipes and so forth, associated with these facilities that needs to be assessed and perhaps replaced.
And what about, finally, all the dead bodies, human, animal, you name it? How big an issue is the decomposition? And no one knows yet. People are seeing everything from hundreds to thousands, and that's just with human corpses. How big an issue is that?
Well, again, that is out of DEQ's hand, but of course that is another a very serious issue to consider with water quality, but I really don't feel qualified to comment on that one.
Overall, you've characterized it just now as concentrated stormwater. Others are saying, you know, much more vivid phrases being used, toxic stew, witch's brew, and all the rest. Do you think that's exaggerating the problem?
I think that's not really a fair characterization. We certainly will have spots where there are concentrations of hazardous materials. We have hazardous materials stored in the facility, but you also have the things associated with urban runoff. We have probably 140 to 50,000 vehicles that have been submerged, each one of them having oil and gasoline and other contaminants, mercury switches, et cetera, that we're working on addressing right now. But the fact is, you have industrial facilities that have residue and perhaps leaks. We're not seeing the primary results we're getting are bacteria contamination. And again, I'm not saying there aren't isolated spots, but to characterize it as a homogenous toxic soup, I think, is not a correct characterization.
Karen Gautreaux, stand by for just a moment. We're also joined from Washington by the EPA senior policy analyst, Hugh Kaufman. Hugh, you're listening in to how Ms. Gautreaux is characterizing what's down there. Do you think she's capturing the severity of it?
Well, this is just what happened with state officials after 9/11, playing down the ramifications environmentally of what occurred. You're hearing it right now as your audience is. Let's be realistic here. You've got a tremendous amount of toxic waste down there. Anything that went into the sewers is now into that. That means industrial waste, hazardous material storage areas. The department and EPA themselves have admitted when questioned that there's oil and volatile material all floating on the top. That's why when CNN puts their cameras in some areas, you see fires and water doesn't burn, contrary to popular opinion.
But Karen Gautreaux is saying we found organic pollution here, not the kind of heavy metals you're talking about, if I've got that correct.
That's not true. That's not true.
Can I qualify?
Yes, please.
In the sampling that EPA and DEQ have conducted, we have not found levels that pose a threat to human risk. At this point, I did qualify that we were looking in residential areas, and these are the samples that we've had access so far. We may indeed find concentrations of worse things, but to date, and I do not think, and we're very aware that and are looking out for these types of things in order to respond as best we can right now. But to look at the information we have today, I would say that toxic soup is an incorrect characterization.
Hugh Kaufman's looked at Superfund sites for a long time. He looked at 9/11. He says he listens and he hears you playing this down. Do you have an interest in playing down the damage?
No, we do not. Our interest is finding what's out there and acting accordingly. Our interest is not to either pay less attention or cause less concern than we should or panic the public. We are trying to work on the information that we have validated as we get it. We know there are oil spills. I just mentioned that we have 140 to 150,000 cars submerged. We know we're dealing with this. We have oil spills that we're reporting to the Coast Guard and our oil spill coordinator's office in different areas. So we're monitoring. We know there are concentrations. We expect to find concentrations of these pollutants. But I will also say that a number of these facilities, the larger facilities, also have hurricane plans. Now, whether or not they were successful, we don't know yet. But we're monitoring in areas of concern, and we're also trying to do representative sampling as we can get access to different sites throughout the city.
Our caller just a few minutes ago, a longtime New Orleans resident, said the only thing he can imagine is to bury it in 15 feet of clean fill or scrape it down to bedrock, and there isn't any. Do you think it's going to take that profound level of post-storm treatment, Karen Gautreaux, or is it just drain the city and go back to work?
No, I think it's going to take a very specific site analysis. I think in some areas, based on the results of sludge sampling, one option may be to dewater the sludge and bury it, as your caller suggested. In some areas, that's not going to be an option, but we're certainly trying to look at everything that's available at this point and think out of the box to the extent possible. We've never dealt with something of this magnitude.
Hugh Kaufman, a public servant who says, look, we're just struggling to get it right and do the right thing here.
Well, let me just put something very clear out there. Louisiana has one of the weakest environmental enforcement regulatory programs in the United States because of the power of the oil and chemical industry in that particular area. There's been tremendous deregulation and looking the other way, and that's part of the culture down there. You heard the person from DEQ talk about automobiles as being the problem. She did not talk about the chemical storage areas, the refineries that have flooded, the tanks, the industry tanks that have been documented to be leaking. So there's a major problem here, and let's stop mealy-mouthing with the public and and give them the facts.
Karen Gautreaux, we've got to take a short break. Can you stick with us for a couple more minutes to get your response to that? Karen Gautreaux with the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality, Hugh Kaufman at the EPA in Washington, speaking from his experience. Today we're at 1-800-423-8255. What do you think of the toxic situation in New Orleans? 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston. Bicon Dental Implants, offering short implants that can eliminate the need for bone grafting. Information is available at Bicon.com, B-I-C-O-N.com. And Private Wealth Management at Babson Capital. For more than 60 years, helping clients build and preserve wealth through financial planning, investment management, and trust services. In Cambridge and on the web at BabsonCapital.com.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about toxic New Orleans, its new biochemical face, its public health challenge, its environmental challenges, its cleanup. You can join us. Will pumps and people and nature shrug this off, deal with it, and move on? Or is there a long-term wound here? Will New Orleans recover? How? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined from Baton Rouge by Karen Gautreaux, Deputy Secretary of the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality. From Washington by Hugh Kaufman, Senior Policy Analyst for the EPA's Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. He's dealt with Superfund to clean up for a long time. Right now, Kevin is calling from Amherst, Massachusetts. Kevin, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think that there's a tremendous fallacy here that Ms. Gautreaux is following, and that's the solution to pollution is dilution. That went out the window back in the late 70s.
You mean dumping it in the lake because that's all you... What else can you do with it? You've got a whole city full of fluid.
Well, that's true, but you have to admit that. You have to admit that it's going to be a tremendous environmental catastrophe. And by pumping it into Lake Pontchartrain and then into the Mississippi and out into the Gulf and along the coast, you're spreading all of the toxics. As you're dewatering New Orleans, you're pumping from the bottom and leaving this scum that's floating on the top of all of the volatiles.
So what's the option here, Kevin? You've got a city full of water, people displaced all over the country that want to go home, a nation determined in many quarters to fix this city up and get it back on its feet. What do you do?
Oh, I know. And there's a tremendously deep emotional tie to home. And the people have to be told early on that they can't come back.
Ever?
Until it's going to be decades, truly. It's going to.
Do you speak from expertise, Kevin?
Has Love Canal ever been opened up again?
Well, okay.
It's on that level. It's beyond that level.
Well, we wonder, but you put it in a very stark perspective, Karen Gautreaux. Do we have a city that's become Love Canal, or is that over the top? How long until New Orleanians can be back in their streets and children playing hopscotch on those streets?
Well, once again, we are going to base those kinds of recommendations in consultation with our health department and any other officials that need to be involved based on what we find in specific areas. I will say that we are doing everything we can, and I hope your listeners do understand that this is not an option. DEQ has worked a long time with Lake Pontchartrain Basin Foundation and others to try to improve the water quality of the lake.
You're saying what is not an option, just for clarity?
I'm sorry, pumping the water into Lake Pontchartrain.
I thought that's what is happening.
But I just hope your callers understand that. It's not like we said, well, this is the easiest option. It is the only option at this point. What we're trying to do is, where possible, we have a large pump going on the 17th Street Canal and some temporary pumps. We're doing our best to try to put booms and skimmers around those pumps to try to minimize some of the damage, and we're also looking at other things that we might be able to do to the water before it gets to the lake. We do not have the luxury of a water treatment system.
Well, booms and skimmers would take off, you hope, some of the most toxic elements here.
Especially the gasoline and oil products, we hope, and maybe catch some solids as well.
You mentioned how much work has been done to improve Pontchartrain. The caller says it's going to go back to a mess, kind of to a dead lake. Do you agree?
No, I would suggest that the caller consult the scientists who have worked on the lake for a long time.
You think it's got the capacity to absorb the New Orleans?
Lake Pontchartrain is at the bottom of it, just to make it simple, a large mixing zone, and the bacterial contaminants should die off within a few days. The organics will degrade, and the heavy metals will hopefully be absorbed in the sediments. This is not what we would have desired, but we do think the lake has the capacity to return to a normal state. It has absorbed bad events before, for example, and I understand that an algal bloom is in no way equivalent. Let me make that clear. In 1997.
When the algae bloom is there,
No, I'm saying there was a large one that had a huge negative impact on the lake in 1997, and the lake recovered. I'm not trying to play this down. I'm not trying to simplify. I'm just saying we expect that over time, nature will help us quite a bit.
And children sitting on the stoops in New Orleans with their family moved back in their homes, is that weeks, months, years, or as our caller suggests, decades away?
I would be very surprised, decades or years. But again, it's going to depend on where the children live and what has ended up in that area and how it needs to be remediated. And we're committed to remediating.
Let me take another call here. Sarah is calling from Washington, D.C. Sarah, you're on the air.
I'd like to ask if it would help to set fire to the water on purpose to get rid of the gasoline, oil, whatever's on the surface, and also perhaps kill some dangerous things along with the fire.
I mean, I don't know how much would burn, but you've got a city sitting there with homes and
the homes are going to have to be razed in any case.
Not necessarily.
Oh, yes.
Not all the homes have been inundated equally.
A number of engineers have been on radio and television explaining why the buildings have to be razed, that the structure, the lower floors, or the
So a lot of it's going to come down. So you say throw a match and burn off the petrochemical part that way. Sarah, thanks for your call. Hugh Kaufman, you're listening patiently here. Speak to these issues of the optimal path of cleanup, given that the options don't look good here, and how long it's likely to take.
Well, first of all, I investigated the Love Canal case back in the 70s, probably when the Louisiana lady you're speaking to was in diapers. There's no comparison between Love Canal and New Orleans situation. The New Orleans situation is infinitely worse than the Love Canal case. There's more hazardous material in that area than was in Love Canal. You did not have the kind of flooding that you have.
You're saying it's worse? New Orleans is worse?
Infinitely worse than Love Canal. Infinitely worse than Love Canal. I speak from firsthand experience. Now, only now is the government beginning a very limited sampling program. Those of us who've been in this field for decades know that if the material is there, if the sewer lines are broken, which they are, if there's hazardous material stored there and it's leaking, and we all know they are, it's all in the water. The department from Louisiana has acknowledged there's an oily sheen on top of all of the water. You do not want to burn that. You will have a major air pollution problem if you start a major fire in that area. That's not
so.
How do you
clean up, and how long does it take?
You have to design a cleanup program based on where the hot spots are once you get all of the water out, and there are going to be hot spots. New Orleans and that area, not just New Orleans, but that area, the other contaminated areas outside of it, other parishes, is the largest Superfund site in the history of this country.
So
it's going to take years. It's going to take years. Now, there's going to be economic pressure to downplay the problem and get folks back in there and get the TV cameras off of that. So long as the TV cameras are taking pictures of standing water in the New Orleans, southern Louisiana area, and there are fires occurring there, the story's going to be covered. If they can get rid of that and have it look pristine on camera, then the cameras will disappear, and then they can start the spin that everything's fine and bring people back in. And that's just spin, because you cannot see lead, you cannot see benzene, toluene, all these hazardous materials that are there and will be there until they're remediated.
I want to get Karen Guttrell's response, but I want to get a caller in here first, if I may. Jose is calling from Brookline, Massachusetts. Jose, you're on the air.
Yes, hello? Can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Loud and clear. What do you think?
Yes, I was just commenting. I just wanted to comment that it seems to me that the reports on the TV are getting very creative about what they call this water in New Orleans. I heard one reporter say that it was like a poisonous giant toilet bowl. Another one said that it was some kind of toxic poisonous gumbo.
Well, I mean, we know the age we live in. I guess that's kind of inevitable, but do you see a real problem here? Do you think they're hyping it up or down, Jose?
Well, it seems to me that they're letting their imaginations kind of take the better of them. I mean, I saw one reporter looking at the water and commenting that there was a little oil sheen on top, and yet he saw some fish swimming in it.
Jose, thanks very much for your call. Karen Guttrow, your state is going to be characterized in many different ways here. We've heard this morning from Hugh Kaufman that it's also been, he characterized your environmental oversight as in the pocket, essentially, of big oil and the chemical industry. You've got a lot of headwind on the public affairs side as you look at this, but it sounds as though you're saying let's not exaggerate. We can deal with this.
Well, I think we don't know what we're dealing with, and we're going to need a lot of resources. And I will say that generalization about Louisiana being in the pocket of the oil and gas industry does not do anyone any favors. I mean, I don't think it's helpful, and I would invite Mr. Kaufman to contact the EPA people that are actually involved in this response, as well as the people at EPA Region 6 Enforcement, with whom we have a very good and positive relationship. We have made great strides in this state over the years. So
are you going to feel pressure to dress up the situation there? Are the politicians going to say, look, we can't be too doom and gloom about this, or New Orleans is never going to come back. Let's get the cameras out of here, as Hugh Kaufman says, and get going.
Well, I think that from the state's perspective, it does us no good to be inaccurate with the information that
mm-hmm.
we need. You can't bring people into an area that they'll find out is not as it seems. We need to be honest, and we need to be in a position to ask for the resources that we will need to bring this area back to hopefully an even better condition than it was before. And I'll just say personally, I'm an evacuee and a native of that area, and I have a personal investment in making sure things are done correctly.
Mm. You're out of there and hoping to get back, no doubt, and we can see it's not going to be an easy road. Karen Guttrow at the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality, Deputy Secretary there. We thank you for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Hugh Kaufman,
Tom, I have to, I
last
have to
word
say
goes
something,
to you. Yes.
If I can.
Yes.
First of all, the federal government brought people back into Lower Manhattan when it was still contaminated after the 9/11 situation so that they could give the appearance of back to normal. The same pressures are going to be on in New Orleans as were in New York after 9/11.
You've called it a witch's brew. Our caller says it's being poetically hyped up here. I hear you saying something different, that you're saying worse than Love Canal. That sounds pretty bad.
Well, there's more hazardous material in that area and in the water than there was at Love Canal. And you've got more material, therefore you've got more contamination.
How many years until you see people or months safely living on the streets of New Orleans?
Safely living, I think it's going to be years. Whether a major PR campaign that the economic interests are going to promote works or not will determine whether safety is considered when a decision is made to have people come back.
Mm. Hugh Kaufman, Senior Policy Analyst for the EPA's Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response, longtime hand at the Superfund cleanup end of that work. Thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you, sir.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty on the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. This is On Point. On Point News analyst Jack Beatty has been watching and listening the cleanup efforts after Hurricane Katrina swept through the Gulf Coast, in particular listening to President Bush as he spoke recently in Poplarville, Mississippi, earlier this week.
It's easy for me to say that I can see a better tomorrow because I hadn't been living what you've been living through. But I do. That's what you got to know, that out of the darkness will come some light. Out of this despair is going to come a vibrant coast.
And he's heard Senator Rick Santorum, Republican of Pennsylvania, in a weekend interview speaking about people who did not heed evacuation warnings.
And you have people who don't heed those warnings and then put people at risk as a result of not heeding those warnings. So there may be a need to look at tougher penalties, candidly, on those who decide to ride it out and understand that there are consequences to not leaving.
Jack Beatty, you've been listening and watching like the rest of us. What do you think about what we're seeing post-Katrina here?
Well, I think we're all trying to account for it. How could this terrible thing happen? And people are trying to account survivors. How did I survive? Why did others not? And the president, in that comment and in an earlier comment where he said we're going to have a fantastic Gulf Coast and Trent Lott, whose house was destroyed, is going to have a fantastic new home. He was using the image, the trope of the phoenix. The phoenix is, of course, a bird in Egyptian mythology that burns itself and then it consumes itself, and then it rises resplendent from its own ashes.
You call it a trope. Isn't that the hope here? I mean,
it is a hope, but it's one of the ways we structure tragic mm-hmm. experiences. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. Barbara Bush used a variant of it when she was in the Astrodome the other day, and she said, "What I'm hearing, which is sort of scary, is that they all want to stay in Texas." And so many of the people in the arena here, you know, we're underprivileged anyway, so this is working very well for them. She's saying, well, they have their cots, they have their blankets, they have their protein bars. This is working better for them.
As they're caught far from home.
Yes, and that's the sort of looking on the bright side. There's something good is going to come out of it. David Brooks has a variant today where he says, you know, this disaster will break the chains of poverty, the bad habits that have been making these people of New Orleans poor. This will break those habits, and it'll be probably good in that respect. Again, looking for the bright side to come out of this. A second thing you hear a good deal is what we heard from Santorum. And it's really on there's a website, a Christian right, I don't even want to say it's Christian, it's some wacky website I've seen that says that this was a God's punishment on New Orleans. New Orleans is Sodom and Gomorrah revisited, lots of gay people there. This is punishment from God. That's an extreme view. But what Santorum was trying to say was that the people, that somehow agency was involved, right? Yes, this was a disaster, but people, if they were responsible, should have and could have left the city. And because they didn't, they really should be penalized because people are risking their lives to save them. Mm-hmm. And you know, that is an effort to restore moral agency to what looks to be some impersonal disaster. Mm-hmm. And, of course, what it overlooks is how many of these people were elderly, how many were disabled, and so on. But again, that is one of the ways in which people try to justify and to understand terrible things happening to otherwise good people. And a third way, of course, is God. People say, God was looking out for me. That's how I got through it. You hear that again and again. And what they're saying is, this was a miracle that I survived. But of course, God wasn't looking after a lot of other people, too. So it's a problematic miracle. It works for you, but why wasn't he watching these other folks? Again, people struggling to make sense, as Milton said, to justify the ways of God to man.
Well, we will go on struggling to take on board what's happened on the Gulf Coast, I'm sure, in the weeks and months ahead. Jack, thanks for the insight. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR, National Public Radio.